Hi, it's Dacker. If you're like me, you probably have a wide variety of interests when it comes to your podcast listening. A little psychology here, a little history there, which is why I want to recommend a show perfect for those with eclectic tastes. Freakonomics Radio has more than 10 years and 500 episodes worth of answers to your biggest questions. But don't be fooled, it's not just for economists and business experts. Every week, Stephen Dubner dives into the hidden side of everything. With the help of guests, including CEOs, artists, and Nobel laureates, he breaks down all sorts of things, like how we choose the people we marry and why using swear words might be more important than you think. So don't miss out. Follow Freakonomics Radio right now, wherever you get your podcasts. Support for The Science of Happiness comes from Odoo. If you feel like you're wasting time and money with your current business software or just want to know what you could be missing, then you need to join the millions of other users who switched to Odoo. Odoo is the affordable all-in-one management software with a library of fully integrated business applications that help you get more done in less time for a fraction of the price. To learn more, visit odoo.com/happiness. That's odoo.com/happiness. Odoo, modern management made simple.
My daughter, who was in preschool, was building castles every morning with blocks and ribbons. And there was just this one child who would every morning come in and knock it down over and over again. And his parents were always there and they never stopped him. They would just comment after. And their comment was just a litany of platitudes and stereotypes. Boys will be boys. They're so destructive. He can't control himself. My daughter tried saying no, and then she tried body blocking him and asking him. Nothing worked. And so then she got really angry, and I realized that if she acted out in that anger, she would become the problem.
What happens when we suppress anger? And what would happen if we tried to work with it instead? Welcome to The Science of Happiness. I'm Serena Chen, professor and chair of the psychology department at UC Berkeley, filling in this week for Dacher Keltner. Today, we're going to explore how the practice of self-compassion can help us stand up for ourselves after we've been wronged. Our guest is Soraya Shamelli, an award-winning writer and activist and author of Rage Becomes Her, The Power of Women's Anger. Soraya joins us after trying a practice to help identify and channel feelings of anger, rather than suppressing or feeling bad about them. Soraya, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Serena.
One of the big themes in your book, Rage Becomes Her, is how women and men are perceived so differently when they get angry. People don't tend to look at the source of women's anger.
That's right.
So in your book, you tell this vivid story about your daughter back in preschool, where every morning her block castle was knocked down by one of the other kids in the preschool. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Mm-hmm. I realized that if she acted out in that anger, she would become the problem, right? It would be her kind of expression that would then become somehow made like the false equivalence of what he was doing and what she was doing. And so then I got angry, and then I did something that many women do, which is to preemptively limit the anger. And I didn't express my anger, but realized after that this was terrible for both my daughter and this boy, because all the adults had essentially created an environment in which she had to ignore her feelings, not be considered legitimate in her defense of her space and her rights and her work. And he was allowed to control the environment, to which she then had to respond in a polite way. And then I really realized that in my own lack of expression of anger, I was modeling very destructive behavior for daughters, right?
Yeah.
And so that was hard because kids, they have nothing better to do than watch you and figure out what's going on. Like, they're so attuned to their caretakers' moods and body language and behavior, and that's how we grow up. We learn that way. And so it, for me, also became a matter of practicing what I preach, which is uncomfortable, right? I mean, anger makes people uncomfortable. Nobody said it was going to be easy or comfortable to say I'm angry or to say, hey, this bad thing happened. What are we going to do about it?
Right.
I think of compassion and anger as being expressed in so many other very broad ways, right? Like if you look at anger management, if you look it up online, you get a bunch of pictures, not kidding, of men, mainly white guys, often from movies, yelling at computers, breaking things, you know, wielding sledgehammers. But in fact, we're quietly, constantly managing our anger all the time, so much so that we don't have compassion for ourselves.
So to that point, for our show, you chose to do an exercise called Fierce Self-Compassion Break. And it's a new practice created by psychologist Kristen Neff, who we'll hear from later on in the show. First, you think of a time in your life where you needed to protect or stand up for yourself, a situation where you felt moderately threatened, but not in real danger, so that you can learn the skill without overwhelming yourself. Then you sit or stand tall and do a series of practices aimed to help evoke feelings of self-compassion while also acknowledging and honoring your anger. The goal is to make you feel empowered to stand up for yourself without making you feel ashamed or embarrassed. How did it go for you, Soraya?
When I first saw the various practices, that was the one that was striking to me. And I thought, wow, you know, I think that that was a sort of maybe an instinct that I had because I couldn't acknowledge my anger at all. I was not a person who could say I am angry or I have needs or any of those things.
Right.
And in her descriptions of fierce self-compassion, I think the important thing that was striking to me was the many different routes people can take to recognizing that.
Right.
In themselves. And I had not done that. And I had an abiding rage. I would say that the thing that was really striking to me when I did start writing, people would say to me, you know, I really love what you wrote. I loved your honest anger. And I was like, who, me? I'm not angry. My writing's not angry. And so, you know, I think I did try some meditation in terms of that self-compassion break. And I went through the exercise to just quietly think about situations of safety, right? What do I have to do to protect myself and establish boundaries and understand what I need and to call that up as something that you're going to concentrate on?
Right.
And so I did that. And I went through the process. And I should say, I have been trying to meditate for several years. So I do try. But I find that I get very easily distracted, which I guess is part of the process.
Yeah.
When I did this exercise, which is literally to be mindful of the time that you're thinking about or an occurrence, right? What I kept going back to was, when did I feel almost an innocent unawareness of the dangers that came with having my body, right?
Yeah.
And I think I must have been 7.
Wow. Okay.
And that really felt like a loss. You can't regain that time, but maybe how do you think with compassion about creating it in a new way? And I think that, in fact, aging often frees women to do that in ways that are much harder when they're younger.
Yeah. And then paired with that is the physical component of the fierce self-compassion practice. You sit or stand tall, shoulders back, kind of the stance one would have if they were standing up for themselves. After that, Kristen Neff, the psychologist who created this practice, instructs you to put your fist over your heart and say words that make you feel protected and safe. So maybe, I can do this, or I'm strong enough to take this on.
Yes. And it's a funny thing because I remember the first time I did that, I thought, oh, whatever. like I'll put my hand on my heart. But in fact, if you put your flat, warm palm against your heart,
yeah,
it's just not something we do very often.
Yeah.
At least I don't do it. I just don't do that very often. And it's a very specific sensation.
Well, it's interesting because I actually think, I don't have the data for this, but I think there's a difference. Like there's the hand in your heart with your palm out.
Yes, there is.
Versus a fist. And she's asking for a fist. Yeah. Yeah.
And I wanted the flat palm. It was so conflicting, actually.
Yeah.
Like when I did it, and then I flattened my palm.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
That sensation of having my open, like an open palm, was far more meaningful to me. I didn't have the same depth of sensation with the fist.
Yeah, interesting. We do tend to move our hands intuitively in ways that just feel natural to us. But then the final step is to put an open palm on top of your fist with the idea of grounding self-compassion with nurturing and tender energy. And that's maybe what you were doing, ultimately.
I think so, too.
Yeah.
It is. But honestly, I appreciated the embodied element of her practice. I literally, like so many of us, like all of us, I can't talk without my hands moving around constantly.
Right.
And that difference between the fist and the hand called that to mind. And in fact, what it led me to thinking about was fear, because in fear, you know, there's a very high chance of tonic immobility and just that loss of cognition that comes with our motion forward, right? With our embodiment. So all of that got all tangled up in this very short practice.
Yeah, yeah.
And so this process of self-compassion and embodiment, I appreciated. I appreciated thinking, okay, what is it like to feel safe in your own body and to focus on that as deserving of that safety?
So I'm curious, going back to anger and the link with self-compassion, where was it for you? You know, I've been studying self-compassion such a long time, and this fierce self-compassion notion was new to me. And initially, it didn't work for me. I didn't understand, because self-compassion is soothing. It's the open palm. You know, it's soothing yourself. And then anger is so, you know, so different. It's the fist. And I've thought a lot about it the past few weeks. And I get it more now, because there are different kinds of anger. But what's the relationship to you?
I think it's hard for people to think of anger as self-compassion, right?
Right.
Like, how does the recognition of your anger, how is that this fierce self-compassion?
Yeah.
How can we re-envision this emotion so that we understand kindness towards the self and respect for the self?
Right.
Which is sometimes, I think, just really difficult for people.
Yeah, yeah. And also, I mean, the average person, when they hear self-compassion, they don't think of anger in the same breath at all.
That's right.
Yeah, because the energy feels different. We're, of course, talking about fierce self-compassion, not necessarily soothing in an obvious way, you know, with the anger component.
When I think of fierce compassion, I think of just the acknowledgement in your own self that you have the right to reciprocity in your intimate and social relationships. You have the right to say to the people who theoretically are supporting you and love you or care for you, my anger is telling me there's a problem, and this is a very social emotion. You are implicated somehow in my problem, either because I would like you to just listen or because you've done something or I want you to help me. And what do you think of that? It takes self-compassion to recognize the anger in yourself to begin with. If you don't have self-compassion, if you are disassociated from yourself, your body, your needs, if you've been socialized constantly to put those aside, you don't have the ability to even know what you're feeling is anger.
I guess I had been thinking of feeling anger and rage and then practicing self-compassion.
Yeah.
But it really goes both ways. I mean, I think you're absolutely right to even recognize and be able to label, I'm angry, requires a level of self-respect and acceptance that's allowed, and that's something that I can feel, and it's okay to even see it that way. It goes both ways, yeah.
Yes. We evolve to have emotions because emotions enable us to navigate the world, right? Like, they're filled with information. And so if we feel anger, something has happened that causes you to feel indignity or threat or risk or danger. And that's what anger is telling you. Something's off, something's wrong with your environment. And we should be paying attention to those signals because they have meaning. And to ignore them is pretty unhelpful and unhealthy.
Thank you so much, Soraya, for being on our show today and sharing with us your thoughts. It's been so interesting and eye-opening.
Well, thank you again. It was really delightful to talk to you, Serena. Now you're going to have me thinking about this fist and this palm.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Yeah, it's powerful stuff.
It is. It is. Maybe I'll try it again and see what happens.
Up next, why the fierce self-compassion break exercise is described as, quote, a mama bear protecting her cubs, except with a U-turn.
We make that U-turn so that mama bear energy also protects ourselves. You're not going to hurt someone I love, which is me.
Dacre Keltner will be back in the host chair in conversation with Kristen Neff, the psychologist who created this practice. More after the break.
Hey, grown-ups, have some curious kids in your life? I'm Molly Bloom, the host of Brains On, a science podcast for curious kids and adults. Each week, a different kid co-host joins me to find answers to fascinating questions like, can you dig a hole to the center of the earth? Do plants have feelings? And why do we lie? Plus, we have mystery sounds to guess, songs to dance to, and lots of facts, all checked by experts. You can listen to Brains On wherever you listen to podcasts.
Imagine a mama bear in the woods with her cubs, and then you start walking towards them. What do you think mama bear is going to do?
I think sometimes people think this fierceness comes from hate or comes from aggression. Sometimes it does, but it can also arise from love, this fierce energy of, you are not going to harm someone I love.
Kristen Neff is a psychologist and associate professor at the University of Texas at Austin, and really the world's pioneer in the study and practice of self-compassion.
Whether you're identified as male or female, there's that fierce protective energy that arises toward people we love.
She describes the fierce self-compassion break practice as a mama bear protecting her cubs, except with a U-turn.
We make that U-turn so that mama bear energy also protects ourselves. You're not going to hurt someone I love, which is me.
Kristen created this practice in part when noticing that it was often women and not men who would attend courses she led in self-compassion.
85% of the people who show up at my workshops are women because compassion is considered part of the female gender role. And men think it's kind of soft, it's going to make them weak. It's anything but weak.
Kristen's own studies show that people who practice self-compassion aren't just kinder to themselves, they're also more resilient, have better coping skills, and they're motivated to achieve their goals.
So the practice is all about really engendering brave, empowered clarity so that we can protect ourselves and stand up for ourselves when needed.
Here's how you do the fierce self-compassion break practice. First, think of a time when you felt boundaries needed to be drawn or you wish you'd stood up for yourself. Nothing that's too triggering. Start small. Next, be mindful of the harm that was done to you.
And mindfulness gives us clarity. It allows us to call things out. You know, this is not okay. We need mindfulness to kind of break the fog of, oh, that's just the way men are, or whatever it is, whatever this being violated, and say, hey, this is clearly not okay.
Then say phrases to yourself that remind you of our common humanity, that others have had experiences similar to yours.
When I kind of expand my sense of self to include all the other people that are harmed, then all of a sudden I'm standing together with a lot of other people. I'm stronger.
Next, put your fist over your heart as a gesture of strength. Commit to protecting yourself.
When you move your attention to physical sensations, it's a way of relating to what's happening. We're still present with our anger without being lost in it. It allows us to try to cultivate a healthier relationship with that anger when it's a physical sensation as opposed to a thought.
Finally, put your other hand over your fist, like you're cradling one hand over the other, combining your fierce energy with tenderness.
All of us need access to both our fierce and tender sides of compassion. We need to harness and integrate both energies. They're both key to well-being.
If you would like to try the Fierce Self-Compassion Break practice, visit our Greater Good in Action website at ggia.berkeley.edu. I'm Dacre Keltner. Thanks for joining us on The Science of Happiness. A big thanks to our guest host today, Serena Chen, the chair of UC Berkeley's Psychology Department. Our senior producer is Shuka Kalantari, sound design by Jenny Cataldo and Ben Manila of BMP Audio. Our associate producer is Haley Gray. Our executive producer is Jane Park. Our editor-in-chief is Jason Marsh. The Science of Happiness is a co-production of UC Berkeley's Greater Good Science Center and PRX. What did playing look like for you as a child? And as an adult, how do you play now? Share with us by emailing happinesspod@berkeley.edu or using the hashtag happinesspod.